And a very good morning to you. This is the Wednesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. You can reach us at 434-1790. You can send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862. Or you can send an email to brasstacks, one word, brasstacks, at starcomnetwork.net. Michelle Braffett is the technical operator, producer, and I'm Dennis Johnson, your host. We'll be with you until 2 o'clock this afternoon on this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. One of the issues that have come up over the period of our coping with the coronavirus outbreak has been the issue of the education of our children, and it has brought to light a problem that we obviously have in Barbados that either hasn't been addressed or hasn't been identified as an issue until this attempt to transition to online learning. It was interesting listening over the course of, 5 or more years, to hear comments, and we usually generalize when we speak, that children today are walking around with their heads in electronic equipment, that young children going to primary school and those at secondary school have expensive devices, tablets, telephones, and that they're stucking them all day long. Now we've tried to transition to learning from home or doing schoolwork while at home on lockdown. We hear that some people don't have devices, some people don't have Wi-Fi. But the more important one that I keep hearing, and this is the one that concerns me greatly, is we have no one to supervise our children. I understand the claim with young ones, and I can understand the challenges with older ones. But it says there's something that has gone seriously wrong with our home and our parenting environment. I remember getting up to all sorts of mischief as a youngster, yes, especially as a teenager. When I got home at 2:30 and my mother didn't get home till about 5:30. I'm not going to recount some of the things I got up to because, you know, statute of limitations and all that kind of thing having expired. However, I don't think my mother ever had to tell me to do homework. I don't think she ever had to check to see if I did homework. As a matter of fact, I don't know if she checked, she would know what I was doing for homework because, you know, I don't think she had that level of education. But if we have 15, 14, 15, 16-year-olds who we have to ask if they've done their homework and to supervise them doing schoolwork, we have a problem that goes beyond COVID-19. We have a problem that goes beyond our education system. We have a serious problem about parenting and about raising our children. That's not going to go away with the finding a vaccine or cure for this particular pandemic. So, what's on your mind? Let's talk about it. There's some emails and WhatsApps that I'll share with you as we go along. And I put on my batting helmet because I heard a caller to Brass Tacks yesterday touting that he's going to call today. It seems like we have a thriller in Manila because he plans to bowl beamers or bouncers or whatever else he plans to bowl. So, whatever's on your mind, let's talk about it until 2. Good afternoon. Good morning, sorry.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, how are you?
I am doing all right, sir. And you?
Oh, not bad. Listen, you gave a COVID-19 and the testing, but so here, staff man was talking about you do a lot of this testing. When you test, you are testing to find a person prove negative or positive. You agree?
You're testing to see if the person has the virus is the reason why you test, as far as I know.
Right. So either they have it or they don't have it. Simple as that. Now, the amount of tests that we've done, we have come up with the numbers that we see there that we can tell you be shown on the radio, on TV all the time. Does it mean that there are other people out there who have not been tested, who not be showing the symptoms? A lot of these people, you will assume, are infected?
No, sir, I would not. And I'll tell you why I would not assume so, sir. According to medical science that we have to date, I asked the persons who are trying to call us via WhatsApp, please just give me a second, sir, not to do so for two reasons. One, the WhatsApp calls have to be taken on a tablet that sits in front of the moderator. It's not plugged into the board. The producer cannot see it. The producer cannot pick the call up. And the moderator, while he's talking and trying to engage the person on the line, can't answer you either. And it's a difficult process that has to be managed by the team prior to the start of the program or in a manner that can get the person on there. So please just send a message. Try not to call because it interrupts what I'm trying to do while I'm trying to do it. Okay, sir, to come back to you. You test people for various reasons. One, either the person presumes they have the virus, either the person has been in contact with someone who has the virus, the person feels they've been exposed to an environment that may have caused them to have contracted the virus, and they present themselves to be tested. Okay? You also test people who have been quarantined because they have either traveled, been in contact with someone with the virus, or who have presented with symptoms. So you test them. And during the quarantine period, if you've quarantined them for 2 weeks because the lifespan is supposed to be about 2 weeks, you test them again to see if they are developing symptoms. And after two negative tests, if there is no evidence of the virus, you then say, okay, you don't have it, you can go. Now, there are things that medical science has not yet come to terms with. One, what strain of the virus are we seeing? Because there's a mutation that is perhaps stronger than the original one that has been detected as far back as February or March. Two, they don't know if once you get it, you can't get it again because of the mutation of the virus. So while the fight may be containing a virus, this is a virus that has mutated and may mutate again, and which is why they're being extra careful about continuing to try to avoid the transfer from one person to the other. Because remember, at first they said it wasn't transferred via air, it was only touch, and then it became transferred via air because the virus mutated. Yes, sir.
Yeah, but that's what you were saying. I agree with you to a certain aspect, but I listened to Dr. Richard Alsop, and he's from overseas, and he said that there
are... So you have listened to the wrong doctors, you know. That's your problem all the time. Let me ask you this something. What makes you think that Dr. Richard Alsop from overseas is right, and why just tell you is wrong? Tell me why.
I never said that you're wrong.
Okay.
Good.
What are you telling me?
It is like telling me that what makes I think that Dr. Antonio Best is right and the rest of the people is wrong. So right. I would never argue against that. Right. I would have concerns. I might have question marks on what
okay.
Dr. Antonio
we all
Best.
Do.
Right.
Because medical science is not profound.
Right. But what you said, and this is what you said, there are a lot of people out there who are not showing symptoms. Mm-hmm. And these are the people that they're mostly worried about.
Why?
The other thing...
Why are they worried about them?
Because those people might have come in contact with people who are infected. But up to the present moment, they're not showing these symptoms. That's all he's saying.
And, sir, how long have they been exposed to the people and not showing symptoms?
That is a question we don't know.
Okay. So why are you assuming that they're a threat if you don't know how long? Suppose they were exposed to the person back in January or February, and they're showing no symptoms now. Would they still be a threat?
I don't know. They might show next week.
Sir, according to medical science, no, you can't have it for that long and not show it.
I'm not too sure about that. There's question marks about that too.
Okay.
There's question marks. So do you watch CNN?
Sir, I don't watch nothing.
Oh.
I tired say so. And the reason why, I'll say it again, why I don't. Mm. If you watch television and you watch various channels and you stick to what you see there and you do not know, you could be misled. I don't want to be misled because the press in the United States has a particular agenda, depending on which one you're looking at. They will feed you what they want to feed you. I don't go to YouTube. I do not go to online and figure that Google is God because people can write anything and publish it. And the problem I have, sir, in dealing with this, I will say again, is that people look at an article written and the person says, Professor A, B, C, D, E, F, G of... this and this and this, and we have no idea who this person is, whether the qualification is genuine or not, whether they get it from a doctoral college or from a garbage heap, and we publish it as being fact. I have a problem with assuming things when I don't know who the person telling me is. That's well, my. That's me.
Full stop. I cannot argue with that.
Good. Ask, I know that.
Let me ask you this thing now. Mm-hmm. We have 82 cases in Barbados and 7 deaths. You with me so far. I can't remember the amount of testing that we have done. But do you really believe that this number 82, when it boils down, could be 282? Do you believe the amount of deaths could rise from 7 to about near 100? You see, there's a lot of probabilities that exist when you're dealing with a pandemic.
Sir, let me ask you this question. You remember when AIDS was first noticed and identified as a pandemic?
Yes.
Okay. Remember what happened?
No, remind me.
All right, but let me remind you what happened. People first say it was this, then people say it was that, then people say only those people over there could get it, and then people say only this and that or the other. Now, it took the deaths of certain people. It took the emergence of certain trends. It took research to discover how it was being spread, who were at risk, and what you should have to do to combat that. There were people who made various predictions based on various things about how far it would spread and how far it would go. When people make predictions, when the scientists make predictions and they make projections, here's what they do. They say, look, based on what we have seen, if we have at the moment no vaccine, if we have only this way of treating it, if we have 8,000 people infected, and of those 8,000 people, 5,000 or more of them have other issues that would cause this to be complicated, we could lose as many as X number of people. So that's a projection. They're not God. They cannot tell you you will or you will not die. They cannot tell you you will or you will not have 8 or 10 deaths. So they would say, if we do not do this, and if we do not do that, and if we don't find a vaccine, and if these people have these conditions, we could lose at least 10% of them. If 10% of the people that we project is 100, we say we could have 100 deaths. That's how they arrive at the figure. It's a projection based on the statistics in front of them. It's not a head count that says if Barbados has 300,000 people, 150 of them were dead. That's not how it's done.
But most probably, well, most likely, we know that we may not have that amount of deaths, but most probably this number here that I am looking at and the model that I am looking at here on my tablet, what this model is showing me
so
that...
So take the tablet, take the tablet and lie down and go to sleep. Have a good morning. Take the tablet, lie down and go to sleep. I can get some David Thompson advice. Take the tablet, lie down and go to sleep. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dad.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Not too bad at all. I am not going down the road pertaining to this virus. I have no knowledge of it. The doctors have no knowledge of it. So I, as a ordinary layman, could only adhere to what we are being told. Could you agree with me?
Sir, and even that I take sometimes with a pinch of salt, although they tell me cut down on salt. Because they too are basing their statistics on various things that I don't know that they may have factored into it.
All of it is that.
So look, I keep telling people, my personal experience guides a lot of the things I say. I was told I wasn't going to live past 45 because of the condition I have.
All right.
So I was prepared to die back at 45.
All right.
Because they tell me they got no cure and, you know. I've broken down on several locations, but I'm still here. So,
and the Bible told us that we would live 70.
Well, I don't know about that. I know I live every day as though it's my last.
Good. All right, let me go on to the subject that you like most of all, tourism.
Oh, Lord. So everybody are coming on that today?
Yeah. Let me say this. Since I was at home, and finding something to do. Mm-hmm. I must compliment Trevor Marshall and his research. But you say you don't watch TV.
I don't.
But most of our tour operators should find time out to learn something by listening to historian Trevor Marshall, I gain a lot of knowledge about other areas in Barbados where ecotourism come back alive, where you could explore. I'm very interested to tourism because the traditional types that we constantly are do on an everyday basis, the additional explorations that came from Trevor, like Hartigan's Cliff and the St. Joseph First Parish Church and such like. And I hope that the tourism sector will look at exploring these things so that it would not be the same thing that the tourists, I mean, although it may be the same thing.
Who tell you they don't do it?
Sold to the tourists, it may not, they may not see it before.
Who tell you they don't do it, don't
say? Right? But I want to tell you.
So you didn't answer me yet, you know?
Pardon, I hear you. Like,
I know that because the radio in the background is distracting you. You need to turn it down.
I know that.
But here's the thing. Who tell you they don't do it?
That's cool, right?
Yeah, I know. Who tell you they don't do it?
No, but these areas that I'm talking about.
Well, Hackleston Cliff and stuff?
Really went into.
So that's you, and this is the point I'm making. Since I worked at Paradise Beach Hotel, which is over 25 years ago, because I've been here for 25 years.
I get that too.
And then another 5 or 6 of that from down at Haywood. So let's say about 35 years ago. The taxi drivers, and I could call their name, Veer, deceased now, Nightlife, Mr. Selman, all these guys, when we did orientation and we toured people about Barbados, and our taxi drivers took them on island tours. Hackleston Cliff was part of it. The St. John Parish Church was part of it. The Andromeda Gardens was part of it. The Flower Forest was part of it. The Monkey Reserve was part of it. All those places were part and parcel of what we sold as being Barbados. And the problem, I heard Auntie America yesterday, sorry, I don't like to call people by radio names and all kinds of things, telling Peter Wickham yesterday about selling Barbados. And I took his point, because when you have tour operators who don't know Barbados, and they only give people the cave and one other thing, and people say, well, we see the cave already. So in Bermuda, for example, a taxi driver who's going on an island tour has to have certification. They have to certify him able to do an island tour, to do just what you're talking about, to tell people about the attractions, to tell people where about those attractions and take them there. If you don't do that, the only place you could take the tourists is around the town?
The point that I'm getting at, I think you missed what I'm getting. I know Hackett's Cliff. Mm-hmm. I talk about the history behind.
I know, and which is why I talk about Bermuda and getting the test.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. For instance, like the when they mentioned Rihanna, and I try, and it is bring me right back when people start using color, and it was interesting because I saw that picture of the indentured servant. If you go to Atlantis Hotel, you will see those, the gutters and so such like, who are ordinary people, fishermen and such like, and how to arrive at where, how to get where they were right now, mm-hmm. like the gutters and such like.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to tie something into this here now. It is only an idea. So don't really lick me. There's an idea.
I don't lick up nobody.
No, let me look. Speaking a lot about agriculture, let me look at the land. Sandy Lane.
Mm.
Sandy Lane has developed so much in the golf industry, which is attached to the tourist industry. We had bought two sugar plant estates, which is Bennett's and Norwood.
Mm.
These used to be a place that used to grow cane.
Mm-hmm.
And also agriculture in the sense of yams and potatoes and stuff like that. But now all of that has gone into the golf course. So that is tied to Sandy Lane. I am wondering, I've given an example, like the lands in St. John. Since we are dependent on both the sugar, the agricultural industry,
mm-hmm.
and the tourism, you don't feel in mind It could be extended where, for instance, if you go into, I want to make it simple as that, if you go into the tongue and there's a shortage of rice, the merchant may tell you you could only get rice if you buy potatoes. You following what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I always follow people's, right, that's right. What I'm here
now,
to do,
what I am saying,
to follow.
You don't think it is time, like these lands, and since the tourism industry depends on food, if we can't tie it so that the hotels should be able to take up some of these lands as a joint venture to supply themselves with certain crops instead of importing from outside, so that we would still have the agricultural industry going and the tourism industry going, but they tie into each other. What do you think about that?
So for the longest while, Ina Harvey and the people at her organization have been preaching this collaboration between agriculture and the hotel industry. Her people, ICA, that's the acronym, IICA, okay? There is absolutely nothing wrong with what you're saying. As a matter of fact, if the hotels, especially those with acres under their belts and personal wells and all the other things they have, desal plants to keep their swimming pools and various things, if they have those, that infrastructure in place, there is nothing wrong. Just as they have gardeners and place growing flowers to plant, because at Paradise we had an entire greenhouse operation up at the top next to the petrol station. Right? They used to grow plants. So if you have people on site growing plants, you could have people on site growing food. You could have people on site growing the condiments you need to season your food. And you have a whole branch of other employment generated. And I'm glad you raised that, because the gentleman who talked about tourism yesterday, who planned to call to thank me today, that's one of the major things and the business that you're in that sometimes we don't pay attention to when we talk about the tourist industry. And I'll give you an example. If according to the statistics, we have about 6,500 plus rooms in Barbados, 6,500 rooms with two people in each, right? You have about 13,000? Right. So if we have 13,000 people in Barbados, we have to have at least 10,000 eggs on a daily basis just in case people want omelette or fried egg or scrambled eggs. If you do not have 13,000 people in Barbados, the egg and poultry production dead, because Bajans ain't buying 13,000 eggs on a daily basis. I don't see any statistic that would support that. So when we talk about developing agriculture, we have to look at how much more we could get out of it if we have the hospitality industry working the way it should. Because you have all the fresh produce, you have the meats, you have the drinks, all those things. And then, of course, your line of business, which is transportation.
Exactly.
So I ain't getting into the hair braiding and the fellas on the jet skis yet, because that will come afterwards. But I'm just saying, from an agricultural standpoint alone, what you say makes absolute sense. Because if Sandy Lane wants grade A eggs or quality cucumbers or whatever, and they say, well, we need X amount and the market can't support it, there's nothing wrong with them saying, we are willing to put X amount of money to make sure that we have the quality cucumbers in the numbers we want on a regular basis. Could be done. But, yeah, it would take somebody who wants to do that to do it.
But not least, I'm telling you. Now, we have found ourselves in a situation. I hear everybody talking about development, you can start up this project, you can start up the next project. Let me take for instance in the average building of a home, a poor man. He start off in a one bedroom home, and as he get children, he try to add more rooms onto the house.
That's the old model, sir.
That's the old model. Right. And the old model always remained the best.
I know. You but, still had your old model car that you had the first thing? Man, don't come with that. Don't bowl that ball at all.
Listen. We are talking about building projects. I mean, all the projects that I heard mentioned that would come on stream in construction was already in the pipeline.
Most of them.
At this time, I mean, over to now, we haven't heard anything about your pet hotel. This is...
Don't make me cry this morning, man.
Right.
Paradise Lost to the Multi-Seasons. Yeah, that one.
Yeah. But the point that I am getting at, the investors who have money to invest, at a time like now, you had $200,000 to invest, and the industry is not performing. I don't think you as an investor would touch that $200,000.
You're joking. You're joking. That's why people talk about Bajans being risk averse. And this is the challenge that I keep throwing out to people. For having lived in Trinidad and Tobago, for example, I have always made this comparison. When things get tight in Barbados, the business people in Barbados say, well, we got to cut back, we got to hold on. The businessman in Trinidad, they say, all you, how much I could get that for? You got plenty of that? Bring it now. I have some money here. Come, let me buy it and hold it. So that's the difference. That's why they snap up all them businesses in Barbados. That's why they take BS&T and they take all of them because that's how they work. Oh, all you ain't want it, all you in trouble, come, give me. Because you can get better soon and I can have it. So that is a business. So businessmen just buy when things are hard. Because the money sitting down there, they're getting taxed on it.
But the fact remains is that if you're looking to build a business, the people be dependent on the what we would call the movement of people. The movement of people is being stagnated right now. And you have to give an account of the people that give you their money to invest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we have to watch. We have to look. Not me, because I ain't got no money to invest. Because right now my investment now is laying down. You understand? So I know you on that. I can ask the question. Now, I operate from a restaurant. They have other people who operate from hotels.
Right.
Now, I have heard the Prime Minister of America mention of people from the ports.
Mm-hmm.
How about these people that operate from the hotels and restaurants on a daily basis who accommodate the tourists who come to the hotel and who come to the restaurant? They are going to get only those. I only heard about those in the port who will get a stipend. What about these people now that operate from the hotels,
sir,
and from the restaurants?
Sir, you see, again, it comes back to our mindset about business in Barbados and government. For too long, successive governments have made it seem to the public that government is this money tree, benevolent society that you shake and things just fall out of it. So they allow lawyers to say, I self-sufficient, I not put into NIS, I not put into taxes. Taxi drivers to complain that they're paying licenses and getting nothing for it. And not licensed, not registered, not paying taxes, not paying VAT, not paying NIS. And then when things get hard, say, what can you do for me? Because you got non-contributory pension, you're giving this, you're giving that, you're setting up the other fund. So we have to understand that finances don't drop from the sky. We have to understand that poverty is not solved by throwing money at it. We have to understand that saving for a rainy day meant something because it was been proven over time that it rains and you get wet. The problem we have in Barbados is that people try to do things under the counter, behind your back, hide who owns what. Taxis bought by one set of people and leased out to others. And then when that support mechanism for those who are doing the job daily and bringing to their employers who hide in behind names and corporations, they can't go to them and say, Skipper, you've been, you know, taking half from me while I'm working for you. What you could do for me now? They tell them, go to government. So we have a problem in Barbados that has been laid bare by the challenge of COVID-19. I talk about education just now. This is another one. And it will not be solved by saying what the government can do for me. That is not the solution. Government is not a money tree that you shake and things fall out of. I got people sending me messages on my phone while I talk to you, tell me that they didn't get pension checks for 2 months. Pension not delivered at their banks for 2 months. No, could be two reasons. One could be that the bank had shut down part of the operations and not doing it, or the NIS have been working to catch up with all the other things they have to do, and somewhere along the line, their pensions are in the system somewhere that they can't find. Now, to find out who is doing what and what's not being done is going to take some time. And unfortunately, during that period, people are going to suffer. 4341790. Brass Tacks, good morning.
A pleasant good morning, Mr. Johnson. How are you?
I'm fine, how are you?
Not too bad, thanks. Number one, I do enjoy the conversation between you and Brother Nasser. Whenever you are speaking, I am glued to my radio.
I thank you on his behalf, ma'am.
Okay. Nevertheless, this morning, why I'm calling is that I would like someone from the ministry to answer this question. Okay.
Which ministry?
The Ministry of Education, please.
Okay.
Okay. They're saying that no child will be left behind. But my question to them this morning is, if you have children or parents that doesn't have electricity and tablets were given to these children, now they don't have any electricity, they have tablets, how can they get internet access? I would have tried to make contact. Oh, they can't.
No. You need to recharge your tablets first off. I don't know any that operate on just on battery power. And two, to have Wi-Fi, you would have to have a line from Flow, and that's powered by electricity. How many children don't have electricity, you know?
Well, this is the question. Well, let me explain myself. I am basically trying to assist a family of seven. There are two adults, there are two secondary children, and tablets were donated. I was the one to donate the tablets. Mm-hmm. There are five other siblings. Three are at primary school. The other two are not, you know, of school ages yet. So I thought that I heard that Digicel was online in terms of like, assisting the ministry. So I recall that years ago, there used to be like an internet card where you can like scratch it off and edit the number like under the password section.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I know. And it works like it works like a cell phone.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if that is going to be news, or how can that be news? Because okay, the tablets can be charged, say for instance, by the neighbor, but the neighbor
and you can use battery packs and things like that.
So my concern is that I have heard and
the battery packs have to be charged too.
I'm subject to correction. Mm-hmm. Okay, if no child will be left behind, you have homes that doesn't have electricity, but yet there are children that are in the homes. How then these children will be on par and not get left behind? Because one child is 15, the next one is 11, and both of them go to what people will consider two top schools. So I try to assist by getting tablets for these children, but still they're being left behind. So how can that be arranged?
Ma'am, I would suggest that in cases like that, where you have households that don't have electricity, and I'm not going to get into why they have, why they don't have electricity, but if you have households in Barbados that don't have electricity on a continuous basis, it means that they're also, it's not the current environment that's causing the child to be left behind. Because if they were going to school and they had to do research for a project or they had to do homework, they would still have to have electricity when they get home. So those challenges would have to be determined how long they've had the challenge, what it is. And I know you keep harping on no one should be left behind. That's a slogan, okay? There will always be those who will be left behind. Whether they want to stay behind by themselves or whether they're forced to stay behind by somebody standing in front of them, there'll always be people left behind. I would suggest in a case like that, that since you know the parties involved, since you know their particular circumstance because you've offered to help them, that you get in touch with the ministry and you lay out your concerns and ask them to give you the best way to do it. I do not believe that while radio works in all sorts of ways, that each independent concern could be addressed on this type of forum in a broad base, because that as you've made this public, if someone at the ministry hears you, they will ask you some of the same questions that I don't want to ask you, like why they don't have electricity, what the problem is, and how best they can assist. And even if you go to Digicel, they too will want to know what are the circumstances, does the person do this, 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 which would make it a little difficult to try to do it on air. Yeah, go ahead. You were saying. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that, Mr. Johnson.
No, that's okay. I'm listening.
Right. The reason why that I called is because you cannot get truth to those numbers. So I decided...
Ma'am,
that
go to
I
them. Call. Go to them.
So I go to the ministry, go down there, explain myself. You know, I am not sure who I would get to see. So
that's
I decided...
True too.
Right, that is why I decided, you know what, radio works. Why not call the radio station, and if someone hear me from the ministry and they need to make contact with me, I'm willing to leave my telephone number so I can give them the relevant information.
Good. Well, leave it with the producer, because I have to tell you that while I understand what people say when they say I'll call the radio station and tell them, I don't know that there are people at the ministry who jump and call us at the drop of a hat. There are people involved in the operations of the ministry. Right now, I have somebody who has been identified in the newspaper as a spokesperson for the Ministry of Education, firing all kind of messages at me. And I don't know why they're firing at me, because I'm talking to you. And if I got to be distracted by my phone and by the WhatsApp messages and the email messages, you see, the problem I have, and it is a problem I have, and I'm real sorry to say this on air, the problem I have is that the various ministries in Barbados employ people. Okay? The various ministries employ people in various capacities, and they pay them to do a job. Right? That's their undertaking. Their job is to get in touch with the public and to spread the message of the ministries to the public. So you either set up a system where people could ask frequently asked questions and respond to them online, right? Or you set up a call number that they could call and people get to them online. Do not sit and wait on people to call a radio station and say, I have a problem. And then to call the radio station and say, I have the answer, tell them, call me. It's not the best way to communicate.
Yes.
One of the problems I've had with us through this entire COVID experience is our lack of ability to communicate properly. And thanks, stay on the line and let the producer take the call, because more than likely the person will get in touch with them and they'll be able to send you the information. There have been too many times during the course of our trying to fight this pandemic where somebody says something and then it has to be corrected, it has to be explained, it has to be retooled before the public understands what they're supposed to do. That's a breakdown in communication. And sometimes a directive is given by one person, the interpretation by another group of people is different, and persons then write the radio station and ask, so what am I supposed to do? 9 out of 10 times I can't tell you. Perhaps there are other moderators who can. But the interpretation and the application of some of the things that have been put in place has caused more problems than COVID-19. And that is unfortunate, because in a pandemic, you need clear, precise information that people at every level can understand, and that everybody does the same thing. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hi.
there are two suggestions I have, and I would like a response from a farmer or somebody in agriculture and somebody from the water authority. Now, the first suggestion I have, I would like to look at the feasibility of irrigating and fertilizing crops with treated waste.
Well, I know some of the Chinese people we had here used to do it, and people complained about it. Well, they used to do untreated waste, I'm told, too. I know golf courses have been irrigated with treated water from sewage plants at hotels. Sometimes you'd have a faint scent, sometimes you wouldn't, but I know it's been used on golf courses. Can it be used for other things? I suppose somebody from the agricultural sector can perhaps help you with that one. But fertilizer is usually waste, right?
Yeah,
isn't it? Go ahead, tell me.
The second one is mm-hmm. for the water authority. Now, I would like to suggest that they construct some septic tanks and dig some suck wells. They transport the treated waste to the septic tanks in trucks until they can run a pipe from the place in Oystings. And the sewage, the treated sewage, is transported to the septic tanks, and then the water flows into the suck wells and eventually returns to the aquifer.
Hmm. Okay. Could be done, I suppose. We have to look at everything in this extended drought. We have to look at trying to find ways of utilizing wastewater in the best way possible. And see, the thing is, though, sir, according to what I recall from the days of Dr. Mwanza trying to talk to us moderators, replenishing the aquifer is not an immediate occurrence. It takes a process of filtration, a process of time for the water to go through the various underground tunnels and caverns to get to the aquifers, wherever they're located, whether they're located along the shoreline or whether they're located inland. It takes a while for it to permeate, is the word they use, through the ground. So even if we put it back into the ground now, it will not immediately replenish the aquifer.
I'm not saying that it would immediately replenish the aquifer back. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that when it goes into the sea, it's just wasted.
Well, again, don't forget, there are aquifers located along the coastline, eh? So it is, it could be wasted. Call it waste. Call it unavailable water. That's what it's called, it, right? That's a fancy term that they use, yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot, then.
No problem, sir. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm not bad, ma'am, and how are you?
Oh, well, you know, just holding on, and, you know, as I say, everyone is trying to hold on the family. Well, you know, as I say, I got a partner, a brother that is very, very sick, but he's holding on, you know?
Okay.
Now, two things I really want to talk about very quickly, because other people are waiting. Yesterday, I watched a video. I don't know if it was filmed yesterday, of a man taking all the rubbish and dumping it on the side of, you know, and this gentleman saying that he's always doing it. Now, you know why? They're trying to keep Barbados clean. And someone like that, I have the number, because it's on Facebook. Now, that person should be fined a lot of money. The least he should fine is $10,000, right? Because the government is trying to keep the country clean. They're working with the workers round the clock. And he leave all the dirty rubbish there. And someone going to call in and said, oh, the government not doing this. There's rubbish pile up here and rubbish pile up here. I bet someone is going to call in and talk about that rubbish. It's a lot, Mr. Johnson. You're one of those small truck, you know, the cutback one.
The open back trucks, yeah.
Yes, and that's full of rubbish the man went and dumped. And it's not right. We, you know, they are trying to keep Barbados clean. And someone like that who don't have no respect for the neighborhood to go and choose something like that. Huh? It is out of order. It is wrong. People like that should do a 6-month spell and find $10,000 because they're telling him not to dump it there and he don't care. He opened the truck side, empty everything off, threw the broom in and he gone. Don't care about the neighborhood. It, all that rubbish should go in his house. Make him take every bit and put it in his house and see how he feel. It's not nice. And I hope the ministry see it and do something because they have the truck number and they have his photograph. And now again, Mr. Johnson, mm-hmm. you see how people now are suffering. Not suffering to say they're not eating, but a lot of people work, Mr. Johnson. A lot of people work. I can tell from experience of a few. I know since I've been here, was working regular and never once put a cent in the NIS. And now they're looking, calling the government should help them. You know, why should the government help them when they're all the years? I know one worked for 20 years. I know the work, you know, on the building side, he always working. Me count his money, me give government no, none of my money. You're mad. And now he's talking about he don't have no money. Huh? I never put a cent in the NIS. He said nobody going to spend his money except he.
Ma'am, there are several people who said so at various levels in society, not only workmen. Which is why I started at the top and I worked my way down.
Well, I don't mean woman, I just mean it.
No. I'm saying it goes at all levels. There are professional people who say, I will provide for myself. I don't need the NIS. I don't need the government. And some of them do. Now, when you have a situation like we have now, let's say the person was, sorry, my lawyer friends can kill me, but let's say the person was a lawyer. Who did work for...
Why you always speak on the lawyers?
My uncle was a lawyer. I wanted to be one.
I know
a few of them well. But let me say why I said this. Huh? If you have, for example, a lawyer who did a lot of work for the offshore sector or for the people who buy luxury villas, etc., they would make good money doing this. Now, if you have no income right now from selling properties, transfer of properties, the offshore sector is not as booming as it is. You have to find ways to supplement your income. If you did not do criminal work, you did not do family work, and even if there's not that available now, you have to find income. So it means that over a period of time, you would have to have built up a nest egg, because if you haven't, you can find yourself in trouble. Because what you can do, right? You can't sit down and wring your hands and say, well, you know, work got to come from somewhere. So they are going to be faced with a problem. No, the reason why I raise that is this. From time to time, when we talk about people with challenges, we talk about people at the lower end of the scale. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't. That's why Brother Nasser and I did not agree the other day. And if he comes back, we're not going to agree on it either. I do not believe that throwing money at poverty solves it. Because you can have somebody, okay? Let me just pick this as an example. Male, over the age of 65, living on his own in a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom, Bajan chattel house or Bajan bungalow that he does not pay rent for, does not have a mortgage on, he's paid for it already, is his. Right? If he has one light in every room, there's only 6 lights. If he's living by himself and he has natural gas, he ain't paying more than $20 a month. If he has more than $20 a month, he got gas leak. Now, I could say this with authority because I paid the bills. Electricity bill ain't more than $35. The most expensive bill was water at a fixed rate, which was $80. Now, with the garbage and sewage contributions, about $135. He does not have, he has a landline that's about, I don't know, $35 or something like that. That person could live on $1,000 a month and still put about $400 in the bank here. He could afford to pay a lady $125 a week to come and cook for him because he only spending, even if he goes to the supermarket and spends $200, and I don't think he spends that, $250, that's still only $500 out of $1,000, you know. But there are some people who can't live on $1,000 a week because they got four children, they got rent, they got bus fare, they got, you know, all sorts of things to pay. A light bill of $200 and a water bill of $150. So when we talk about money, you can't just say, give them $1,000 and they could survive on it, because some people cannot, while others may be able to have $500 in the bank and sit down and laugh and go on vacation too, if they, you know, if they could travel. Because that's life, unfortunately. I thank you for your contribution. This is Dr. Brass Sacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Dennis. How are you?
Not bad seeing you.
Oh, boy, sleepy turd.
Get some rest. I thought old people supposed to stay home. You should be getting rest.
Stay home.
Mm-hmm. Well, then rest.
Stay home. I watch the TV. I never watched that TV in all my life.
Okay.
I passed from Beach to the Malfa. I got out of the vehicle and I went and I made some observations, right? I don't know who was related or who wasn't related. But if what I saw this morning at Beach, all of his families, Barbados got a lot of loving families, I can tell you. If the amount of people, if they are indeed related, because I mean, I'm in no position to say whether they're related or not. I want to say that I saw lots of people at the beach, and a lot of them were clustered together. So all I'm saying, there could be or there might not be families.
Why you think, so what families got to do with it?
No, they said that if you're related, you can be together.
Sir, they say households. Yes, sir, they say households. Household, what make you think that household is family? Sir, I got two daughters and a son. None of them in the same house. One in Canada and two of them here. There's family, but they ain't born here. Sir, listen, and that is why I said, you know, I can shut up because people tell me I talk too much, so I can shut up. But sir, let me tell you, right? That's why I talk about the interpretation of the law and the passing of the law causing more confusion than COVID. Because they say households, they ain't say family.
Yes, you're correct.
And I can't prove that you and I know in the same household.
Very correct, because you might have a guest.
Or two.
You might have two guests.
Alphabetically, two.
Or four. But technically, boy, you're so correct.
No, nah, don't so, worry. But why are you the driving boat, though? You should be home sitting down.
No, today.
Today's your drive boat there? All right,
no,
buddy.
No. I went to collect something from one of my daughters.
Okay.
But when it passed Bomb Beach, malicious me get out.
You get out. I know, man.
To see, just to look.
Mm.
That was malicious.
They should have locked
me,
you up.
Right?
They should ask you. They should ask you where your swimsuit.
You forget it.
I hear you.
Now, there's show on YouTube that children, and I want parents to pay attention to this, and as per Anna's or nothing. But I saw on YouTube children and the virus. If a child is showing signs of rash, irritation, or severe abdominal pains, but they say it's rare, right? It's not common, it's rare. But I think you should always be prepared or should always observe. I'm not a doctor. I want to make that clear. I'm no doctor. Now, in my humble opinion, this Mr. P, I'm telling the boy, going to do nothing. If this is a virus attack to the immune system, I think what you should do, this is me again, reinforce what I've been doing, don't eat a lot of things well, continue doing rather, that the other people eat. I'm not saying it's going to work for everybody, but I feel if a certain part of my body is under attack, I should try as much as possible to strengthen it and reinforce it. As you correctly said, every day something else about this virus coming up.
Hmm.
Every day. No.
It's a work in progress.
Huh?
It's a work in progress. The virus is mutating and they're trying to keep abreast of what's happening. And sometimes scientists are disagreeing with each other. You got political differences getting in the way. So, you know, there are lots of things that just changing from day to day.
And this is not a political speech, because I should go off saying anything people is accused of, but you know me. I know the Prime Minister is trying her best, right? But it's my opinion. I don't feel that the ban on alcohol should have been lifted, right? Because there's some people when they get drunk, they're going to sleep. There's some, when they get drunk, they do foolishness. There's some, when they get drunk, they do more foolishness, right? And I think she need to retain that.
You think the people who drink alcohol and consume alcohol on a regular basis weren't getting it?
Weren't they?
They weren't getting it during the shutdown? You really think so?
I can respond to that.
I know you won't respond to that. Yeah. I know you won't respond to that.
No,
I expect you to respond to that at all.
You are correct. I'm my final thing. You are correct.
I'm correct, but nothing. I ask a question, now you make me correct. That's just a question.
You are. No, the lady from Bank Hall who have having the bad experience about
the brown water.
If she calls us, find out from her if she made the call, and if so, if anything is being done about it.
Okay, sir.
If not, I would try to take it from there.
You again? All right, sir. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling because I have a query about, really and truly, this is my first time calling into Brass Stacks.
Good to have you with us.
Okay. And what's bothering me, or what I am calling about, is the new system that they've had put in place for the children. It's more a technological system, so a lot of parents know that they're going back out to work. They have to leave the children home with the grandparents or aunts or uncles, somebody that may be a little older that may not be able to understand at best how this system works. And it is already very difficult for us as parents. I was wondering if the Ministry of Education has come up with any ideas as to whether they can have some sort of maybe... telebroadcast as to how to go about doing it, or some sort of something that would give parents or grandparents at our home a step by step, like how we would have had different broadcasts about wearing our masks and washing our hands, something that would give you a little run through, a basic run through, that you would be able to better equipped with this new system?
It's a challenge that's been brought forward by even teachers. There
right.
was a teacher I spoke to who has two young sons, and I raised the question with her about whether it wasn't a bit of a challenge having to tutor her class and also have two school-age sons to deal with.
Right.
And her comment was that she's a teacher, IT technician, and several other things all at once. So I know it's a challenge that is faced by not only parents, because she said, I think what she told me was that the software reacts differently depending on the device. That's what she said.
Yes, because what I've noticed is that on different platforms, we have different issues. Because
correct.
If you have an iPad or if you have an iPhone, you're easily able to get into the system and go on and do the work. But right. some tablets, because they're Android, I guess they're different versions of the Android. Some are not as updated
as others. Updated as correct.
So it's making it very difficult. And I guess when you are doing a program like this, it's everybody's not at the same level. So mm-hmm. it's making it harder for parents, even I guess for the students themselves to understand, because I guess there are assignments that need to be turned in by a particular time, but I've realized that they're not making it by the assignment date, because you have so much difficulty in turning in the assignment or submitting the work. And then the other thing too, a lot of parents don't have, as far as I know, some that I know don't have printers to print out the work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we we've been like trying to write out what we see on the tablet and letting them do the work, take the pictures or do videos of certain things so we could send in to the teacher. The system, I find it's very difficult, but I mean, once you get the hand of it, I mean, it will work because there are different platforms that can be accessed by the teachers, because there's also the access to Zoom, and they can have all the children in that one classroom come together and do a video class.
Right.
But that itself has also been giving some trouble because of the connectivity of certain areas with the internet and stuff.
You see, and ma'am, these are some of the challenges that I alluded to when I said that when I started the program, I said that the COVID-19 pandemic has brought certain things to the fore.
Yeah.
And one of them, families in Barbados, the education system, how we interact, and the fact that some parents now have to take a more active role in what their children do.
Correct.
Roles that they perhaps, right? And sometimes I know I annoy people because of various things, right? But I make these comments because I want people to try to cope with what they're dealing with and try to find a way out of it rather than wringing their hands and saying, we have a problem. Now, having identified the things you have identified, the other parent who called about, or the other lady who called about people with no electricity, there was a call to David Ellis. I was producing the program on Monday where a lady talked about going back to work and having two young children and, again, elders who she could leave them with, who wouldn't know what to do to assist them, or putting them in the care of somebody she does not trust. These are issues that have remained in the background or dormant because we've not had to deal with it in the manner in which we're dealing with it now. Now, having come up with these issues, I think it would be in the interest of, because we've got more than one ministry to deal with here, the Ministry of Education, from the point of view of teachers, how they interact with their students, and how they're getting through, because you have to monitor what is happening, how many children are they reaching, because the teacher I spoke to said out of a class of 25, the most she gets sometimes are 5.
Right.
Right, which means that's another problem you have to deal with. Then you have the IT section of it, which obviously the ministry or whomever is responsible for telecommunications, bandwidth, availability of internet access in various places, that is something that they would have to deal with. You almost need, I hate to use these words, but task forces to sit down and itemize all the problems. What are the possible solutions? How fast they could be implemented? How many of them have to do with parent and child care? How many of them have to do with electricity? How many of them have to do with internet connection? How many of them have to do with software development? You have several problems to deal with. At various levels. Then you have to deal with the teachers who are teachers and parents and teachers, because they have to teach their children too. So you're going to, it is not something that I think could be dealt with in isolation, that the Ministry of Education says, look, we have a blanket. I take your point. Good one.
I
will put in step by step how to do it.
I think by now, though, there should be. I mean, we had the little break of vacation, but I think that through the period of vacation, that it should be a much smoother process at this point.
Apparently, it's not.
Well, I mean, certain things should have been up and. I mean, some teachers weren't doing anything up until just last week, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it would make it difficult for some students that are now getting involved in the program. So. But, I mean, if there are people who are not doing stuff that have the know-how of these kind of things, maybe they can reach out and give some advice or, you know, give some help to parents that are struggling with the technological side of the whole system. Because it's very difficult for someone that doesn't use this program on a regular basis to just wake up one morning and be going on and being able to do it straight away. It's something that... It's very difficult for you. You get frustrated. You're trying to help your child. And
you can't.
And you can't. And you want them to be able to have the best in terms of the educational tools that are being provided. So it's making it very difficult. I would hope that the government would take time to just review and see what better steps can be made, even if they can do a little GIS video or something for parents that just need a little assistance with going on.
Sir, ma'am, sorry, I agree with what you've said. I know there are students at the University of the West Indies who are very computer savvy. Some of them are doing computer programs. Some of them solve issues for their friends. So the knowledge is not sitting in the ministry alone.
Right.
There are people out there who can assist. And I don't know if they can work out a way of setting up groups,
yeah,
study
that,
groups,
that would be
assistant
nice.
Groups,
a lot of
call-in
yeah.
groups. Yeah, because if they have downtime or free time, or even as part of their university program, they could outreach and try to assist with persons who are having problems. It would help them and help the next generation. The other question that I suppose will be asked, and someone sent me a message asking, why the schools open anyhow? Why they just didn't take a longer time to try to get all this sorted out? Well, I suppose idle hands at home doing nothing for lengthy periods with parents going off to work, they figured they'd get up to more mischief and go online and do other things. But going back to your problem, and the challenge with various systems, various things not being compatible, that is an IT problem that has to be solved at a different level than the one you're talking about step by step. The other thing is updating and upgrading the systems will also be something either the parent or the student will have to know how to do, and would also require step-by-step instructions in how to do it. And it all comes back to the availability of internet, power connections, and connectivity, reliable connectivity. There are several times that you can't get onto platforms because, quote-unquote, the internet is down. You hear it sometimes when you go to pay bills, the system down. And you're not sure why the system is down. So I hope that they're hearing the different complaints and that something will be done about it. This is Down to Brass Tacks.